you, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic Bee Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website at www.theorganicbee.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, send us a tweet on Twitter too, at The Organic View, or you can contact me directly at June Stoyer on Twitter.
Today, I'll be speaking to Karen Giblin, who's the co-author of Eat to Defeat Menopause. Change is never easy, especially when it comes to the change of life, also known as the Big M, or menopause. People think that as you go through the changes, there's going to be some kind of a magical pill that will ease you through your body's hormonal changes and often the uncomfortable physical reactions that can occur. However, there is a really simple solution: food. In the book Eat to Defeat Menopause, Karen Giblin and actually the other author, Mash Siebel, two of the nation's top menopause experts, break down the most important need-to-know facts about menopause, offer tips and advice for combating its symptoms, and provide healthy and enticing recipes. And I mean, they are enticing. And they're guaranteed to satisfy every craving, or rather mood swing. Combining the latest research on menopause, the traditions from both of their backgrounds, Karen's being Italian and Mash's being Jewish, they take just traditions from both of their backgrounds and from chefs across America, and they show that making simple changes to your lifestyle in many cases can be just as effective as combating menopausal symptoms with the latest drugs and surgeries, so on and so forth. And it's just amazing. I mean, who would have thought that chocolate, of all things, I mean, people are constantly talking about chocolate, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit, but it's just amazing how if you make some very interesting choices with your food, a lot of the problems that many people experience simply are, they are no more, and it's amazing that this can be done without pharmaceutical drugs. It never ceases to amaze me that when it comes to anything to do with health, there's so many companies that are pushing their pills or their latest remedy, this, that, and people tend to forget to go back to basics, and that's what I absolutely love about this book. And so I would like to welcome to the show Karen Giblin, and we're going to be talking about not only how menopause is affected or how women are affected by menopause, but what their partners go through. So I'd like to welcome to the show Karen Giblin.
I'm so pleased to be on your show today. And, you know, we're not alone in the menopause arena. There's about 6,000 women entering menopause per day in the United States. And accompanying them are the men or their loved ones, their family members that are affected by the way that the woman experiences the menopause with the symptoms and things like that. And I'm delighted to be here to talk about why I'm a Red Hot Mama, why I started my program Red Hot Mamas, and now why myself and Dr. Mash Siebel have written a book called Eat to Defeat Menopause.
Yeah, it's interesting just from the audience's response. We're getting a lot of comments from Twitter and Facebook, but what's interesting is that there were a lot of men actually that commented, and they also had questions, because it's interesting that often it's assumed that this just happens to women, that men just seem to breeze through life, no changes, no nothing. And the truth of the matter is that everyone's body is constantly changing, and change is not necessarily a bad thing, as you point out in your book.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But, you know, what happens is in the menopause, June, is, you know, there's different stages of menopause, or, of course, you can have it as a result of surgery, like I had. But, you know, most women are caught off guard, and they don't even understand the different stages of menopause. For instance, the perimenopause, okay, you know, can be like living hell for a woman when all of a sudden symptoms start changing, and their bodies start changing, and they start noticing symptoms, but they can't categorize it. What's going on? Is it menopause? Is it something else? And so there are certain things that happen during that perimenopause, and that can happen in a woman's like early 40s, and typically it can last about 10 years. And what happens usually in a woman's 40s in that perimenopausal age group, there's a decline in their fertility, and again, that's about a 10-year period to 15-year period even. And then, what happens is their ovarian function becomes very erratic, their menstrual cycles become irregular, they change in consistency and flow, and then finally you get the cessation of menses. But, during that perimenopausal age group, you have, you start noticing hot flashes, the vasomotor symptoms, like hot flashes increase, and night sweats increase. Also, there's an increase of headaches during that perimenopausal time. And, and a lot of women complain about difficulty sleeping. But, and then you get to menopause, and some women say, well, what is menopause? And the average age of menopause is about 51 years of age, give or take 5 years. And it really means when you have not had your period for 12 consecutive months, that means that you're in menopause. And, it comes from the Greek term meaning meno month. Meno is month, and pauses meaning stop. So it's the cessation of your period for 12 consecutive months. And then you have those postmenopausal years, and those are the years that after you've experienced menopause, those are the years that, again, your ovarian hormones go extremely low, and it puts you at increased risk for osteoporosis and cardiovascular disease, et cetera. But the terms of menopause, the stages of menopause, are oftentimes confusing, June, to women. And then, again, it doesn't necessarily happen naturally. If it happens naturally, you go through those various stages that I just told you. But it also, it also can be influenced by if you've had surgery. Like I had a hysterectomy with the removal of your ovaries. That will put you into surgical menopause. And again, you can be at any age to have that. And it also can be caused through medical interventions like chemotherapy or radiation. So there's different reasons why women have menopause, and, for each of us it's unique. But, again, it's very confusing to women where they are and what are the symptoms, where I am and what I can do, what I can do about some of the symptoms. And, there's some real common symptoms at menopause that I'd love to discuss with you.
Karen, can you, if it's not too personal, can you talk about your own story and just exactly what surgical menopause is? Because
I guess
that we've had a lot of people that are wondering about your own personal experience, and it's really led you to one major journey. The fact that you're the founder of Red Hot Mamas, which I'd like you to also talk about in a little bit.
Okay. Well, my story goes like this. I lived in Richfield, Connecticut, and I was a public official serving my third term, 6 years, in public office as selectman for my town, Richfield, and very involved with my women constituents and my constituents, all the voters that voted for me. When, suddenly I needed an emergency hysterectomy and I had to have the removal of my ovaries as well. I was at a world-renowned hospital, Yale New Haven Hospital, and I had a terrific physician, a surgeon physician, GYN. And the doctor actually prepared me for the surgical procedure, but did not prepare me for the menopausal symptoms that followed. And I was dealing with pain management after the surgery, and here I was, suddenly having hot flashes that I didn't even know what a hot flash was. I frankly thought, I was having a fever, but it wasn't, and I was sweating profusely, and, again, having heart palpitations, my heart was fluttering, and I was even having the chills as a result of having, after I would have the hot flashes, then I would become very, very chilled. So suddenly, you know, sometimes surgical menopause can bring on symptoms more abruptly and also more severely than a natural menopause. So here I was at age 40 in at Yale New Haven Hospital, having all kinds of menopausal symptoms, you know, not sleeping, waking up, and different things like that. I came back to my local community in Connecticut, and, you know, my women constituents started calling me, asking me questions about menopause. And I felt as if, you know, I was not all alone. It made me feel much better that I, you know, that I felt like I was ignorant and not having asked my doctor about symptoms that would follow my surgery, or how to manage the symptoms that followed. And so that was the thrust behind my starting Red Hot Mamas in my local community in 1991. I started it so that women could have get information about menopause that's medically sound, and I developed an education program, and I named it Red Hot Mamas because my young daughter at the time used to see me having hot flashes, and she used to say, "Mom, you're a Red Hot Mama." So I thought it was a cute name, and I thought it was very, very apropos, Jean, because, you know, many of us do have hot flashes. But, you know, today, you know, our programs, it started out very small, not intended to be, you know, just anything but a local education program. But, you know, as the year went on, we had over 600 Red Hot Mama members.
Wow.
And so hospitals started asking me to develop the program for them. And today our programs are offered free in hospitals across the United States and in Canada. And, you know, many, many women attend our education programs so that they know how to take charge of menopause before it takes charge of them. And you know, we have a very large website, which is redhotmamas.org, which has won all kinds of national health e-awards, and we have a newsletter called the Menopause Minute, you know, and even an Ask the Expert column that women can write in and ask one of our medical experts, you know, questions pertaining to their menopause. So as you can see, you know, I made a menopausal career change leaving public office and really have devoted my time and energy to helping women gain access to information about menopause, because it is oftentimes a really, really confusing time, you know, and ways to deal, you know, learning ways to dealing with symptoms and eating well and different things like that are really critical to women during the menopause transition.
Yeah, and it's very interesting how the only education that seems to be available are commercials that make fun of people. The pharmaceutical companies that try to, I guess, give people this superficial peace of mind that by taking a particular drug or something, their symptoms are going to be not only alleviated, but they won't exist anymore. And the thing is that these are naturally occurring things it's a naturally occurring transition, rather, in your own body. And it's unfortunate that as a society, we're taught to not only fear it, but to basically make fun of it, to, I guess, make people that are going through this feel as though they have something to be ashamed of. And that is something that really needs to stop.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely correct. I think, first of all, you know, there's nothing to be ashamed of. You know, it's a registered trademark of being a woman. And if we live long enough, we're all going to experience menopause. And again, typically at age 51, or again, it can occur as a result of surgery, or it can occur as a result of medically interventions like chemotherapy and all that. It also sometimes occurs even earlier in women, you know, and it's considered premature if a woman has it before the age of 40. So, you know, my gist is it's a universal experience that happens to all of us. And, you know, our symptomatology varies enormously, and it's such a highly individualized experience again, June, you brought out a good point. When it comes to that, you know, it's not a one-size-fits-all when, you know, for treatment options and how to and ways to manage your symptoms. So, again, you know, I think it's very important for women to really understand what to expect when menopause occurs and really how to manage its course. And, you know, there needs to be great emphasis not only on hormone therapy, which is very beneficial to those with severe, moderate to severe symptoms, or those who can't control their symptoms by other methods, but, you know, emphasis needs to be placed on exercise and nutrition and really on, you know, non-hormonal kind of ways of treating symptomatology of menopause. So, again, you know, it's not all, you know, about medications and things like that, so that it's about education and knowing what you can do.
Now, one of the common questions that has been asked by the audience, especially with men, is what are the symptoms for men when they go through their change of life?
Well, you know, our book is dealing, Eat to Defeat Menopause, is mostly helping the women identify mm-hmm. the menopausal symptoms for them. But again, you know, men have their symptomatology just like the women have symptomatology. Again, there's issues with sexual functioning, you know. Both male and women's libidos do decline as we get older, and we also need, you know, greater stimulation and different things like that, and I can talk about that later on. But again, you know, there are, you know, there are some common issues because of the changing hormones in both male and female. But, you know, again, our book, Eat to Defeat Menopause, is actually dealing with healthy eating and how our diets and exercise play a role on some of the symptomatology. But if you would like me to share with you some of the common symptoms in women, you know, I certainly would love to share with you with that. But, you know, and then some of the men probably could relate to some of these as well.
Without
but not all symptoms should be, you know, again, if you have symptoms, any symptoms, you should really discuss it with your physician, because not all symptoms can be, you know, can be claimed to become menopausal symptoms. There are certain medications you could be taking that might be causing hot flashes, or there could be other medical conditions that could cause different things. And so that's why it's important that I always say I would like women and men to keep a log, like even on writing it on your calendar, of any symptom that you might have and the severity of the symptom and how it impacts your life at the time you've had the symptom, you know, if it affects your quality of life, and really share that with your clinician, because again, you could establish patterns and that would help your, you know, the clinician identify what's happening. But in women, June, there's some really, really common symptoms, you know, of menopause. And I don't know, you know, your age or anything, but if you're perimenopausal, again, you know, typically the vasomotor symptoms, that's what is considered the hot flashes, the night sweats, the heart palpitations. And, you know, those start increasing during that perimenopausal age and continue on. You know, they can last, you know, they can last 6 months to 2 years, and some last even 10 years, some of the hot flashes. And, you know, they really cause, a lot of concern and are very troublesome to women, especially if they occur during the night. And, you know, 75 to 85% of women have 10 or more hot flashes a day or at night. And, you know, again, during that perimenopause, the frequency increases. And really, the incidence of the hot flashes last, you know, and actually increase for the first 2 years after the stop of your menstrual cycle. But, you know, what happens in a hot flash, you know, your skin temperature actually does rise, and your heart rate increases from 7 to 15 minutes per beat, and again, you know, they can last from 1 to 5 minutes. So they can be quite disconcerting, and, you know, Even you know, it's interesting to some of the studies have found that, you know, African American women have greater incidence of hot flashes than Caucasian women do. So, I mean, even your that influences the amount of hot flashes. Again, you know, it can be influenced by diet and your stress life and lifestyle and even climate affects them. But, you know, again, the other things that also we have and we can't ignore are other symptoms, and it's just not hot flashes. And I don't know if you want me to get into some of those other common symptoms.
Sure.
Or not.
Well, actually, I want to continue to talk about the hot flashes only because we've had so many comments about the hot flashes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do you know that you're not just feeling a little under the weather? Say if you're at the beginning, how do you know that you officially are having hot flashes? That seems to be a very common question.
Okay. Well, typically, what happens during a hot flash, you'll your neck and your face might become red. You feel flushed. Sometimes you feel like your heart skipping and beating a little bit faster. You might suddenly break out in a profuse sweat. And not all, again, how we experience a hot flash is as unique as our fingerprints. So what I'm describing may not have everyone have the same effect. But, a lot of women, many women will have to, try to cool down with something. But your skin temperature does rise. Your heart rate, again, increases. And, you could break out in perspiration. You know, some women say that they feel like, they feel like they could fry an egg on their chest. They get so hot. But there are ways you can treat hot flashes without medication and different things like that, too. Through relaxation, through yoga, massage, and, again, keeping the thermostat low, and that isn't very easy especially when I live in my household and I put the temperature down real low. My husband keeps saying, oh, he can't deal with it anymore. But, I mean, certain things like layering your clothes and wearing cotton and things like that, portable fans and keeping the room cool, and again, maintaining a healthy weight is really important for hot flashes because, women who are heavier will actually have more hot flashes than women who aren't. These are just some different tips that I have for hot flashes. But, it's just not all about hot flashes. There's, sleep is a big issue.
Yes, sleep is a very, very big issue. And the thing is that it's interesting. In your book, you talk about alcohol, and it's interesting how many people will actually consume alcohol to help them relax, to help them even to go to sleep.
Okay, well the thing that you women need to know is, first of all, that the National Sleep Foundation has conducted a survey a few years ago, and they found that about 48% of women at that menopausal age group really had difficulty falling asleep and staying asleep. And, so it's very, very common that you start noticing changes in your sleep patterns during menopause. But, again, there are certain things that you want to watch, okay, if you do lose sleep and different things like that. And you want to try to exercise, number one, and exercise earlier in the day, okay, then late, because exercise will help induce some sleep and make you feel better. But you also want to, say yes to some of the carbohydrate foods, like eat some foods that contain that help you with sleep. Okay, and those carbohydrate foods, okay, well, it release the tryptophan and an amino acid that helps the brain manufacture serotonin, and really will help you fall asleep. Now, by that I mean, you can take a small portion before going to bed, not a large portion, because we're all about, watching our weight during menopause, because that's another big factor that happens to us, our weight gain. So, but if by you eating a little bit of the whole grain bread or a small portion of another carbohydrate or foods that contain like tryptophan, like turkey or warm milk, that will help promote sleep, you know, and also things like anything with omega-3 fatty acids, tuna and different things like that play a role in sleep induction. And so, you know, those are good things. But in our book, okay, we list some of the foods to say yes to and some to say no to. And again, the alcohol, okay, you think, again, you brought up a good point. Alcohol will, you know, will help you. You'll feel sleepy. I know I do when I start drinking alcohol. 2 glasses of wine, I'll be very, very tired. But then,
yeah,
which is true, and I do. I love a good glass of wine, and it's very good for your heart. But more than one really does make you tired, and then what it's going to do, it's going to wake you up in the middle of the night. But it also increases your risk of getting breast cancer as well. So, and also it increases your risk of lead to osteoporosis, because too much alcohol, you know, can affect the way your movement, and if you fall and break a bone. So it's really important that you limit your alcohol and play it safe by drinking no more than one drink a day. But, you know, and then there's other things, too, about with your sleep. You know, again, I think you want to watch large meals, because, you know, your body has a hard time digesting a large meal. And, you know, it's going to tell your hypothalamus to send out a signal that causes a hot flash. So try to eat smaller meals earlier than when you go to bed, and that will also has been shown to help decrease some hot flashes.
Now, it's interesting, the whole subject of, or the whole topic of sleep, because what's interesting is that it doesn't matter if you're going through menopause or not, if you don't get the proper amount of sleep that your body requires, you're going to be moody no matter what you do. And it's just interesting that many women will consume alcohol to not only take that edge off, but to help them to sleep. And yet what's happening is that not only are they're waking up in the middle of the night, but they're depriving themselves of even more sleep just by that simple action. And it's just amazing that many things that people normally would do without thinking, you really have to pay attention to what your body is saying. And the bottom line is that your body needs sleep. And
you're absolutely right. And I can't begin to tell you how many times I've walked through and walked through my room and saw my Lazy Boy recliner and wanted to jump into it, okay? So, you know, sleep is an important function. And when I don't get enough sleep, you know, I feel grumpy the next day. But I also know that it really is compromising my health, you know, physically and mentally. And, you know, and if I know that I don't get enough sleep, it's going to put me at greater risk for developing chronic disease. So, you know, I always share, you know, that any woman that is not sleeping, you know, should really discuss it, you know, with their clinician, and their clinician should really assess and ask questions about their sleep quality. But I think, you know, again, it's important that women understand that sleep problems do occur during the menopausal transition, but, you know, they should really understand, like you said, June, to really make sleep a priority. And if they find that they're getting in bed and after, you know, 30 minutes and twitching around like a Mexican jumping bean, they need to do something and learn to relax and try things like avoiding watching the news and before going to bed. And I know a lot of women, menopausal, they become menopausal insomniacs, and many of them have told me that they turn on the TV shows, they turn on, you know, they're great shoppers during the you know, the home shopping networks, they turn those on, they get themselves in trouble and different things like that because they become menopausal insomniacs. But it's really important that, you know, women consult with their doctor and, you know, and tell them if they're not sleeping, you know, and really, again, that diary that I told you, you know, that little calendar about some of the symptoms, they really should have a sleep diary as well, really to record, you know, how difficult it was, and really share that with your doctor too, because, you know, the doctor can help them, you know, establish, you know, their sleep patterns and maybe make some recommendations to them, you know, that will help them with their sleep and things like that. But that's another symptom of you know, that. And then there's other issues too. The women become, if you lose sleep, you become anxious and your mood changes. And,
yes, the mood swings. Actually, we had a really interesting question from the audience, and basically, how do you differentiate if you're at the point where you're maybe in the beginning stages and it's a natural mood swing that's from your hormones, as opposed to somebody that really should be on a regular medication? I mean, there are people, it's interesting, when you look at the TV commercials, and granted, maybe this is just clever marketing, but there are some people that really do need to be medicated to control that, excuse me, that chemical imbalance. But then there are people that just simply, you know, it's a hormone shift. It's not forever. And the thing is that this particular person wants to know, how do you differentiate if one is, you know, something that really needs serious attention, or if you could just control it through your diet, exercise, and whatnot?
Well, I think the first thing to do is make healthy eating important with your moods, because your moods are affected by your nutrition and things like that. You know, again, you know, in our book, Eat to Defeat Menopause, we cover that, one of those things. But, you know, again, you want to, if you feel that you're anxious, you're moody, and you should, and, you know, if your PMS is no picnic in the park, okay, and it's lasting and coming on more and more frequent, and you have a decreased sense of well-being, you certainly need to talk to your doctor about that issue. And certainly, you know, but I think that it's very important also that your diet, you know, plays an important role. You want to try eating some of the omega-3 fatty acids, tuna, salmon, and mackerel, and, you know, vegetables, and lots of asparagus and Brussels sprouts and beets and things like that, things that are rich in B vitamins and, you know, high in folic acid, because, you know, this kind of, the B vitamin complex stabilizes the mood, and because, you know, it needs to make serotonin. And so, you know, again, you know, you might, you know, the need to also, you know, avoid certain foods like the sugary foods, because that can make a rise in your blood sugar and increase your mood disturbances. So you should watch your diet, but you also, if you have any kind of difficulty, things that last, you know, you find it lasting longer and longer, or major changes in moods, and you can't get out of it, and, you know, it's no picnic in the park, as I mentioned. You need to discuss that with your healthcare provider, because, you know, that will not only affect your sense of well-being, but it also affects the well-being of those around you. So, again, discuss it.
No, it's interesting that you coin it in the book, avoid liquid candy. And
yes.
Yeah, people tend to forget there's soda. There are all sorts of different beverages that people don't really think about as being liquid candy that you see women all over are sipping, whether it's a Frappuccino or some sort of iced beverage, tea beverages. There are a lot of tea beverages that are out there that are just chock filled with sugar and all sorts of artificial junk. And the bottom line is that all these artificial additives, flavorings, the sugars, all that, it does add up and it does affect you. And the liquid candy, so to speak, that's such an excellent way to describe it, because it's something that I see so many women doing. And the thing is that if you make a better choice in what you are going to consume, if instead of going for that iced mocha latte or all these different names that they're coming out with, if you opt for, in my opinion, organic iced tea, especially at night, I would opt for some really good organic rooibos tea because of the medicinal properties in the tea. It will help you to relax. And that's, once again, it's something that seems very obvious, but when you look around and you see how many women are drinking all sorts of beverages, and not every woman is going to reach for a bottle of water or just something healthy. I mean, look around you, folks. You'll see it everywhere that you go. With, even when you're driving in the car, look around you and see how many women are sipping on these quote-unquote liquid-type candies. And that also contributes to this very problem.
Well, you're absolutely right. And when you mentioned the liquid candy, and we did have that in our book, and I'm glad
I love that. That was
you
brilliant.
Like that term. Okay. For instance, you know, they're in every 12-ounce can of soda, there's 12 to 15 heaping teaspoons of sugar in the soda. And, you know, again, you know, that's an extreme amount of sugar to consume. And, you know, many women are drinking a few sodas a day, and they're wondering why they've gained weight, okay? And, you know, even sugar, the sugar sweetened, the other kinds of, you know, with the false artificially sweetened sodas, you know, you can also gain weight on that. You know, again, you know, we're advocating, you know, drinking more water and more healthy teas and things like that, or even drinking non-fat milk as opposed to avoiding that liquid candy, because that's extremely important, you know, during the menopause to avoid that, because many, many women during that perimenopausal have complained about weight gain. And that's another issue, major weight gain during the menopause transition. So, you know, again, you know, you want to, again, avoid that liquid candy, but know how to utilize it and eat, you know, and drink different things and stay away from the sugars.
And also, when it comes to just the food choices, it's interesting that, especially with your heritage, in Italy, I remember doing quite a bit of work discussing the impact of Italian cuisine on American culture. And back the turn of the century, it was, you know, to eat well meant to live well. And the thing is that still holds very true in this century because of the fact that when you're eating good, healthy foods, you feel better. When you eat junk food, and what I mean by junk food is not just chips and the crackers and all that, but it's also about the fast food, the food choices that you're making that are high in all sorts of fats and fried foods, foods that are microwaved as opposed to traditionally cooked, or even raw foods are a great choice. And it's just interesting that the poor food choices that women make really do make a difference.
You're absolutely right. You know, my background is my family came from Italy, and they came over. They brought with them, my ancestors brought with them foods, you know, foods that they could cook food, and they opened a bakery. They opened a restaurant in Little Italy in Baltimore, and had the restaurant for over 60 years. And, you know, at all of our family gatherings, we spent around the table. You know, we spent numerous hours on Sundays and holidays at the table. And, you know, we had a love of food and a passion for food. And you know, that's what started me with this cookbook, because I looked at the women there and the women over in Italy, and they certainly were not heavy. And I looked at the Mediterranean-type diet, and, you know, again, we used foods. We used whole wheat pastas, and we didn't have a lot of heavy cheese sauces like a lot of the American diets have on our pastas and things like that. And some of our recipes in our book will show that, you know, you can eat pasta, you can eat it in a good portion, a small portion, and with not weighted down with heavy sauces and things, and you can still have a healthy diet and eat and have your pasta.
Thank you. Now, the next question, which is a very, very important question, has to do with your sex drive. Many women find that as they're going through menopause, they're just not excited. It seems as though they've lost interest. How can food actually help them to rejuvenate just the whole excitement? I mean, it's interesting. You see, every other commercial is for men, for all sorts of dysfunction, this and that, but they don't really do anything as far as women.
Well, you know, it's a common problem, okay, and what happens is many, many women say their sex drive is either locked in neutral or goes down like the stock market. So, you know, what happens is it's very common that, you know, in menopausal women, they're slower, they have become, it's slower sexual arousal, it takes longer to become aroused. There's, again, less lubrication that occurs. And, you know, sometimes women, you know, with less lubrication can develop painful intercourse and they may even flatline sex. But, you know, again, you know, it's very important, you know, to discuss this. If any of these issues, just don't flatline sex. That's not what you should be doing. You should be discussing it with your healthcare provider. You know, a lot of the culprit is the lowering of our estrogen levels. You know, because that can cause vaginal dryness. And there's, you know, there are ways to manage that, you know, through over-the-counter products that you can get, and I can discuss that. But there's also ways, you know, to look at some of the foods. And in our book, we've covered some of the foods that really can spice up the sex life. And in it, you know, again, we mentioned chocolate. And, it, you know, chocolate is given out at Valentine's for a reason. It really produces feelings of pleasure. It releases that serotonin in our brains, and you know it raises those endorphins. You don't want to eat too much. You could eat a little chocolate, one little dark. The dark chocolate is the best. Okay, a small amount in moderation. But again, you know, chocolate again will release those endorphins, and it makes you feel less depressed and good. But again, try eating it as a prelude to lovemaking. But eat it in moderation. You know, again, you know, there are certain things like the asparagus, okay, that was served, you know, centuries ago, you know, as during weddings, okay, because it was thought to consider as an aphrodisiac and has very high vitamin E content. So certain things like that we mention in our book. We mention about the, you know, different things like what to say no to, okay? Again, you know, the alcohol, again, you want to watch the alcohol. You know, certainly it may make you feel amorous with the first one. However, it affects the blood flow, and it really impacts the testosterone levels and libido. And that contributes, you know, if it affects those levels and it goes down, it really affects and promotes sexual dysfunction. So, you know, and that's in both men and women. And it really will make it harder to reach orgasm and things like that, and especially in men, even getting an erection. So, again, you know, the decreased sex drive does occur in both men and women, but you have to know what to say yes to, what to say no to, and, you know, and what you can do, you know, about it. And especially you can discuss it with your healthcare provider and different things like that. And there are, you know, ways of treating that also. You know, there's some quick fixes. Again, if you're having sexual, you know, vaginal dryness issues, as I mentioned to you, you know, there's some quick fixes like lubricants that are, you know, water-soluble, long-lasting vaginal moisturizers. And, that, you know, there's even hormone therapy options, you know, to treat atrophic vaginitis, which is really very dry, fragile, brittle tissue that really pain with sex, and that also, you know, makes sex no longer appealing. So again,
I was going to say there are so many wonderful certified organic lubricants on the market. I mean, things have come a very long way, and the thing is that you don't need to go to some CD shop to buy them. You could buy them actually in any pharmacy. You could even order them online if you wanted to. But the bottom line is that these are household products. I mean,
they're household products. They're available over the counter. And certainly, you know, there's no more, you know, the best aphrodisiac of all and the best thing is to have a respectful, loving partner. But sometimes women, you know, sometimes women are not openly discussing their sexual concerns with their partners, and they're just avoiding sex. They're flatlining sex, and their sex goes down like the stock market, as I mentioned. So it's important to discuss any changes in your sexual functioning with your partner so that, you know, maybe between the two of you, if he's respectful and loving, you can learn how to spice it up, you know, have a romantic evening, change of environment, and different things like that. But again, it's not necessary to flatline sex. It's important to use it or lose it and to discuss it openly and discuss it with your partner and, if necessary, discuss it with your clinician. Even Kegel exercises is extremely helpful. Again, to keep that sizzle instead of the fizzle that happens sometimes at menopause in your sex life.
And that's an excellent point, not to mention the fact that it's something that is talked about more and more. You know, very common subjects nowadays. It used to be something that nobody talked about, but the thing is that the many people pronounce it differently. The Kegel exercises are also great to deal with the spontaneous incontinence that happens. And it's interesting, if you've ever seen an episode of The Golden Girls, the mother, Sophia, she's made a lot of comments about that. And what's interesting is that shows like The Golden Girls, you see a woman like Blanche Devereaux, who's basically very promiscuous. Her character really shows that just because she's a certain age doesn't mean she's dead. They talk about all the very things that we've just spent the last almost hour talking about. Karen, one last subject that I'd like to talk about is soy. There's so much information out there that gives mixed messages. There are people that say, oh, don't go near soy. It'll mess up your hormones. Then there are other people that say, soy is great. So what is your opinion on soy? And obviously you're a fan of soy because so many delicious recipes in this book.
Yes, yes. We know that in Asian societies, there's no word for hot flashes because it's presumed that it's because of their consumption of soy. However, you know, most people do not know how to cook with soy. They don't know how to use soy. They don't even know what soy is, okay? But soy has phytoestrogens. It's considered a plant estrogen, and it mimics the weak estrogens in our body. And there's many, many ways to incorporate soy in your diet. And, you know, some women do say that it does help with hot flashes, and, you know, it might even have some extra health benefits. But again, with the soy, it's very important that you discuss before consuming soy this with your doctor because, again, you know, we're not quite certain about the prevalence of how its effect on breast cancer. So, again, it's important before you doing anything over the counter to not think that everything is safe and effective, but discuss anything the way that you try to manage your symptoms with your clinician, whether it be exercising more or eating something special, to discuss that and share that with your doctor. But again, soy has been used for centuries by Asians and again, you know, it's been very beneficial to them and because they don't have hot flashes. And in our book we really cover extensively some of the ways to cook with soy, edamame. We have lots of different recipes. We have soy milk, we have different things, and we outline all the different ways that you can consume soy in your diet. And you know, for some, you know, that this is very, very enlightening because when you hear soy, you know, many women do not know how to cook with it. They don't know how to utilize it in their diets, you know, whether it's miso, whether it's soy yogurt or tofu or et cetera. But, you know, again, it can be helpful to you during the menopause transition. But, again, you need to talk to your health care provider to make sure that, you know, just get the latest research on that soy has come out with. And every day things are changing. And every day we read a different headline that says it's beneficial, and then we hear that it's not beneficial. But again, you know, we do cover it extensively about the different types of soy, how you can get it in your diet, and then, you know, once you have that understanding of the soy foods, then I think to discuss it with your doctor and see what the doctor says.
Well, I think especially for someone such as myself who's a vegan,
yes.
Soy is something that's
very important.
Very important, yes.
Yes.
And it's true, many women do not know what to do with soy. I know for myself, the first time that I had soy milk, all I thought to myself was, why would anybody want to drink this?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that when you understand how to cook with soy, and whether it's soy milk, tofu, what have you, once you have an understanding of how to work with it, then it becomes transparent. And you have so many wonderful recipes, and the pictures in the book are just really great. And what's nice is that the recipes are very, very easy to follow, and you don't necessarily need to break your bank in order to make these recipes, which is also very nice.
Well, what's interesting about our recipes, and I want to get back to the soy, and I'm happy that you mentioned that you're a vegan and that you utilize soy, so you're probably using it more than just putting it on your dry cereal. You're probably using it and making all kinds of things with it, and I think that's important for women to know. But I think it's also important to know that Asians drink soy milk the way that we drink cow's milk in the West, and that it's been around for centuries. And so, you know, it is abundant in phosphorus, thiamine, copper, potassium, magnesium, and it's a great vegetable protein. So, again, you know, you need to know what to do with the soy milk. But getting back to our cookbook, Eat to Defeat Menopause, what we did was Dr. Seibel and I both enjoy cooking, and I come from a family, again, that owned an Italian restaurant for years and cooked with a Mediterranean diet, and none of our family members or any of them in Italy ever were heavy, and because we followed the Mediterranean type diet. So I incorporated some of our family recipes in there, as well as Dr. Seibel's Jewish recipes in there, from his bubba. But we also had recipes from chefs from all over the country, including the chef to the White House. Gave us some of their recipes, and from chefs from all over the country, and so, you know, some of the recipes are really, really delightful and really delicious, and you know, again, you know, I can share some of mine with you if you'd like. You know,
sure.
We incorporated, you know, I have a tuna and bean salad, which incorporates cannellini beans and red onion and capers and tomato and Italian tuna, okay, or regular tuna, and you know, and that's it's low calorie and it's very, very delicious, and it really has a lot of, what we've done with each of our recipes, we've added the content of what the red hot ingredients would be, like the omega-3 fatty acids, for instance, the vitamin D's, the protein, the B vitamins and things. So each one of our recipes has been looked at about the ingredients and why they're good for you. You know, we have a lot of salads, arugula, tomato salad, tuna bean and bean salad. We have a lot of pasta dishes as well, if anyone likes pasta. Again, we don't weigh our pasta down with a lot of heavy cheese sauces. We'll have a puttanesca, which has lots of olives in it. We have a lemon fettuccine, which utilizes, fettuccine and zests of three lemons and other kinds of ingredients, and spaghetti with tuna and lemon walnut farfalle, you know, linguine with seafood and different things like that. And we also have a lot of fish recipes in there. and, you know, like orange scallops and halibut and wine and tomatoes, and all of these, you have the nutritional content, which is analyzed, and, you know, it has healthy and great, delicious recipes that we've all tried.
Now, one other question that I'd like to ask you that we've had quite a number of comments about from our audience is in regards to supplements. We actually have a comment from one of our audience members who, Silvana Saeed, she wrote, primrose oil, if I could say this. She makes a comment about how she finds it to be beneficial when it comes to dealing with, I guess, mood swings. So when it comes to supplements in general, what do you recommend that women do, especially when they're going either through peri or full menopause? Is there a particular recommendation or just anything that they should include in addition to what they may normally take?
Well, the first thing, I think that they need to do is not assume everything as, you know, as not over the counter is not risky, because anything can be risky, and anything, you know, because we don't know long term effects on any product or any non prescription herbal remedies. I think it's important that women just don't assume that they go to a store and just ingest anything that they feel looks good or the 19-year-old in the health food store sells them.
Excellent
but what
point.
I'm saying is, yes, I really do think that it's important that they discuss it with their healthcare provider before taking any product, and really go to a menopause clinician, one that's certified as a menopause clinician. Because
how do you find a menopause clinician?
Well, that's interesting. I'm a member of the North American Menopause Society and the International Menopause Society. But the North American Menopause Society have clinicians that have gone through the certification process of becoming a menopause clinician. These are the clinicians, whether it's a nurse practitioner, whether it's a physician, et cetera, that has gone through the course of through the North American Menopause Society, and their website is menopause.org, and these individuals have a thorough understanding of menopause, okay, and they also have a thorough understanding of the clinical research that comes out on an annual basis of menopause, and these doctors or nurse practitioners or, you know, have the certification of a menopause clinician. So that's one good way of finding that individual. But I would say that some of the things are risky, but some are very, very helpful to women. Again, you need to discuss everything with your clinician before, and not assume nothing is risky because you buy it over the counter.
I completely agree, Karen. That's excellent advice. And Karen, you definitely are the red hot mama. Can you tell our audience how to not only get in touch with you, but follow you on Facebook and keep up with everything that's going on with your organization? I mean, just fabulous advice. Your website is just tremendous.
Well, again, I thank you, June, and I'd love to be your menopause resource, and because there's so many symptoms we didn't cover today, and certainly I'd be happy to talk to you about other symptoms of menopause and perimenopause, et cetera. And so, you know, the book is Eat to Defeat Menopause, and again, it has more than 130 recipes, and it's a nutritional guide, and it gives a lot of information about menopause and also healthy eating and exercise. But, you know, you can also find me and about our program and myself on our website, which is redhotpop.org.
Thank you so much, Karen. And folks, please pick up a copy of Karen's book, Eat to Defeat Menopause. And thank you for tuning in. This has been June Sawyer with the Organic View Radio Show. Have a great afternoon.